this ruling fundamentally says women cannot be trusted to know what is best for themselves, and that our lives and our bodies are not our own, that they belong at some level to the state, that people who can get pregnant are now the one group to be explicitly denied bodily autonomy and integrity by the law. And it's infuriating.
This is Mission to Scale, a podcast that reveals the tools, mindsets, and strategies that organizations and funders need to maximize their impact. Because the world's biggest problems need solutions at scale. I'm your host, Dan Borelowitz, founder and CEO of Spring Impact. Here at Spring Impact, we've been working with Planned Parenthood to help them scale their impact. I'm constantly inspired by the innovative work they do in their fight for reproductive rights. When I learned of the leaked draft decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade, I knew I had to invite Dawn Legans to the show for a special bonus episode. Dawn is the Interim Executive Director of Planned Parenthood Global and the Senior Advisor to the President. She also oversees the organization's tireless strategy and innovation efforts. This interview was recorded in mid-May, over a month before the Supreme Court officially overturned Roe v. Wade. Yet, our conversation is still extremely relevant, since Dawn knew that there was little chance that the Supreme Court would reverse their draft decision. When the decision was officially made, I reached out to Dawn again. She addressed the news and talked about the steps they're taking in the face of the crisis. But before we share Dawn's important update message at the end of this episode, we talk about the successes and lessons from Planned Parenthood's journey. We also discuss how the organization was beginning to prepare for the likely overturn of Roe v. Wade. Dawn's commitment to social justice began at an early age.
In third grade, the playground rules were unfair to girls. And so I led civil disobedience to change the playground rules so that we all had access to the amazing jungle gym on the boys' side. And pretty much since then, I have just been obsessed with when the rules are unfair to people. And that can be well beyond, obviously, girls and women. As a member of the LGBTQ community, have been part of that fight, just really believe that we have to change the policy and the politics to make the playing field really work for people. And so just have found that Planned Parenthood is an amazing place to work on a cross-cutting set of issues and to have so much opportunity with my colleagues and our leader, Alexis McGill-Johnson, to really pursue solutions at scale.
Dawn supported Planned Parenthood as a brand consultant for roughly a decade before joining the organization as a full-time employee in 2011. Founded in 1916, Planned Parenthood serves the needs of communities across the United States through a network of more than 600 affiliated health centers. They offer a wide range of services, preventative care such as birth control, testing and treatment for sexually transmitted diseases, and screenings for cervical and other types of cancer. Their international branch, Planned Parenthood Global, has worked for almost half a century to ensure people in some of the world's most neglected areas have access to healthcare.
Planned Parenthood is very interestingly almost an idea at scale, right? It first spread across the United States over 100 years ago, and then leaders from around the globe in the world of reproductive health and rights and access came together and then formed the International Planned Parenthood Federation. So really, we in the U.S. and then globally are part of one of the largest federations and service providers in the world. And yet, of course, we know we're only meeting a fraction of the need. Planned Parenthood here in the United States is composed of a set of amazing living laboratory, community-based service providing affiliates across the country. Together, they provide care to approximately 2.5 million people, close to 10 million services, in addition to, you know, education and advocacy work that they do in their communities and partnerships that they have. And then the national office and our federation collectively, we serve 150 million unique users through our website and other digital tools and properties. And then we do have our global arm that I'm lucky to also work with, where we partner with amazing, bold, cutting-edge organizations in Africa and Latin America who are really trying to change the culture and the climate for people everywhere to have reproductive health and rights. And of course, in this moment, we're able to learn so much from them.
It's an extraordinary story of scale. So where did it come from? Where did it get to under your tenure as the chief brand officer and vice president for Planned Parenthood?
Well, you're nice to put it around me, but really I was surrounded by and am surrounded by just we call them innovation ninjas throughout the organization, you know, who are always looking for how they can have more impact. And I think that's where the story starts, right? Is impact. And then how do we make sure that we are expanding that to reach, again, as many people as possible. And, you know, you and I and all of us working with Spring Impact, and just want to note that we've been doing some great work with you all to expand our innovation capabilities. A year ago, Alexis McGill-Johnson, our president, really charged me and Galdeb Katie Skibinski and Ambree Molitor and some others and said, look, we can see what's coming. As we were coming out of COVID, as we're watching these cases, we are going to have a leapfrog capacity to be able to, and it's going to have to spread throughout this whole organization. And that's not saying there hadn't been innovation before. Again, I think we've had 100 years of innovation and improvement as we have gone along and expansion, but, you know, a kind of renewed focus on that. And really looking, you know, I look at the value impact scale conversation that we have. And, you know, often that's written on a page for our listeners, you know, value and then an arrow to impact and then an arrow to scale. And it looks very linear and it looks like it ends at scale. And I think how Planned Parenthood has improvingly thought of this over time. Planned Parenthood's not a perfect organization and has had to learn and course correct at various points, but is we add not only looking at value, but values. So is the value in line with our values, right? So we ask that question. And then on impact, we put impacting, and scale, we put scaling, and then we draw it as a circular idea. So we're constantly checking, is it creating value that's in line with our values and the values of our partners and patients and the people we serve? Is it impacting at the level we think it makes sense for what we're spending and doing? And how can we continue scaling it out in the world? And right after we scale it once, we go back into the, is it, you know, a value, is it continuing? Because we know too, as sometimes as things get bigger, they don't always get better. And you have to find that right level. And then you might have to really do some shifting if you want to take it to a whole nother level.
Planned Parenthood's circular approach ensures that they stay true to their values as they continue to scale.
In the time that I've been here, we have, again, under the leadership of many people, grown our advocacy program from a few million people to now close to 20 million supporters over the course of a little more than a decade. On the care side, we have grown over that same decade from, you know, gathering up the online web presences of a number of innovative affiliates, which maybe was, you know, a couple of million people, maybe they were touching, to now, again, a decade later, 150 million people, unique people, coming and using the website and the tools. And then another thing I love to talk about is, you know, before COVID, only 11 states in this country allowed for telehealth that was able to access with Medicaid, right? And we're very sensitive to, of course, making sure that we have equity in our programs. And when the rules loosened during COVID, in literally under, 6 weeks, we went from having, just a very slight telehealth presence to having telehealth offerings in over 500 clinics. So one thing we are good at is seeing a moment and grabbing it and making something happen. What we're less good at, and I think Ambreen and others are poking us to do, and you all are poking us to do, is plan for it from the beginning. So that's where some of our learnings are.
So you've talked about the role of technology in expanding access to sex education services. What role do you think technology plays in this issue now, particularly when we're on the cusp of so many dramatic changes?
Yes, it's going to be fundamental, as you can imagine. And, it's an area where we thankfully have had such a great experience learning. I want to raise up something that we learned from and that will go into the future. We used to do about 10 to 20,000 kind of text chat visits for young people a month. And we were really, kind of saying, how can we get to more young people? What have we learned from the things that we're doing? We're now doing 50 times that over the course of just 3 years of growth from the learnings that we had by adding our AI-enabled Roo chatbot, which actually met a need that our team discovered in their human-centered design research as they were talking to young people. Young people said, we don't always want to say it to a real person the first time. And so they would rather type it in. And if the computer and all of our smart folks who create the content can answer it for them that way, they're actually happier. And then, of course, if they need more, they need a human touch or eye on something, we're able to put them to somebody who can help at a deeper level. But, we are used to responding and changing and growing. And so one of the things I know, we've been working on together in one of our sprints is patient navigation. How do people get the information they need in the fastest, simplest, cleanest way possible, find out everything available to them from how to access the abortion funds, who are doing such important work in terms of travel and planning, and how do you take care of your kids when you have to drive 500 miles, to the very many great health providers, both in Planned Parenthood and the independent providers. There's all kinds of things. How do you know what's legal or not in your state? It's going to be a patchwork of things. It's not all going to be the same. You need up-to-date information. So we are looking at a number of tools and sharpening the ones that we already have to do all of that better and quickly.
I mean, this is huge growth, to millions of people using the clinics, coming to the website. What have been some of the challenges as that scale has happened?
As you roll out something that large, of course, and as you are doing it with our affiliates are each rooted in their community and notice different needs and variations on things that you might want to do, right? And sometimes it's easier to, you want to create that core thing and just spread it everywhere. And we really believe in how do you have a core, but that it can be nuanced, right? As it goes into different communities, different demographics, different age groups. And so, I think making sure you're keeping that core while you're allowing for more creativity, if you will, and making it more relevant to folks is maybe a little bit of a challenge. I think anything you do, we've talked about Anne May Chang, one of our gurus that we really believe in and follow the lean impact model a lot, says that donors and folks are great in the new idea, but sustaining the idea, and once you get to the level we're talking about, that's not a low amount of money to do something new. The other thing that I would say is it's really, really hard to give up less promising work for new things that may work better, because that's good work that's being done. It's not bad work. Everybody can give up bad work, right? It's very hard to give up good work for something that really might be more promising and that people have, you know, in some cases really worked their whole careers on. And so, you know, giving people the freedom to set something aside and bring themselves to something new and to not feel like that's failure.
So Planned Parenthood is global. Interested in the lessons you've learned about creating this federation, this partnership. And is there any advice you'd give to leaders or social entrepreneurs who are building global networks and looking to do the same?
Yeah, one of the key ideas that we have, well, a few of the key ideas that really drive us that I would encourage them toward. One is we back the brave. Look for the bravest people doing brave things, find them and partner with them, right? Work at the leading edge. We know too many people, you know, I think again, Spring Impact's all about this, is we cannot settle. We have to be pushing the boundaries of what's possible, about the number of people who can be reached, about the bringing the cost down as low as possible for them to get what they need, to just help people be able to imagine ambitions that were never possible. So, you know, it's really looking for the bold people working at the leading edge. And then the third piece of that, though, is we believe in locally led, globally connected. And that's what we kind of do in the U.S. We're locally led and nationally connected. And then we are part of something larger where we're locally led U.S. and then we're globally connected. You know, around the globe, we don't go setting up little Planned Parenthoods. That's not always the answer to replicate exactly what you've been doing. We partner with people who are already doing great things to open this two-way line of communication, and really a multi-line, where a party line where we can all be collaborating together.
Hey, Mission to Scale listeners. We're a pretty new podcast and we're building our audience, so I have a little favor to ask you. If the show has helped you in any way, can you share this episode with a friend or colleague? Maybe it's someone who likes listening to a good podcast in their downtime or on their way to work. All you have to do is copy the link to this episode and send it over with a, hey, you might want to check out Mission to Scale. I appreciate you for helping spread the work, and thanks so much for being part of the Mission to Scale community. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe to Mission to Scale wherever you listen to your podcasts. Now back to the show. I talked to Dawn just a couple of weeks after the leak of the US Supreme Court's decision to potentially overturn Roe versus Wade. Here we talk about this historical moment and about Planned Parenthood's response. So as we speak, we're on the verge of Roe versus Wade being overturned, potentially. For those who might not be familiar, could you tell us a bit about what Roe is and why it was so significant in the fight for reproductive and gender rights, and what would happen if it's overturned?
Right. Roe v. Wade was a decision in 1973 where the Supreme Court said that, in fact, there is a right to abortion and a right to privacy in the Constitution. It has provided a framework by which women and people in this country have known that they could access safe legal abortion. And when you look at what the world has become and offered for women since that time, you see all the reports on the progress that women have made in terms of their health, in terms of their economics, in terms of their freedom, their participation, their political participation. All of these things, really, you can look at that moment in time and see one of the biggest shifts in history forward. And so at the same time, we know that Roe was a framework of access, but it did not guarantee access. And many people, because they were low income, They were in marginalized communities. They were left out. So the law did not mean that they had access. It meant they could have had access, except people from the very get-go tried to limit it, tried to take it away from people. And over the last decade, we have just seen a ramping up of thousands of little laws, big and little laws, that have chipped away at access. And now we are about to see Roe fully overturned, if we're to believe, which I do, the draft that was leaked from the Supreme Court. And people are not prepared for what this is going to look like, what this is going to mean to the dreams and health of our young people in this country. And it's going to be a sad day, but we are going to be ready for it. And we are going to, as Alexis says, they kick us out of the Constitution, we won't stop till we're back in.
I've been living in the US for 5 years, but I still am a Brit and I'm grappling, probably like many Americans, with how all of this happens. How does something like Roe versus Wade become overturned? So my understanding is, on the one hand, you've got this group of highly motivated people, often religiously motivated, who really genuinely believe that babies are being killed. And on the other hand, you have the choice of women to decide. Can you just talk a bit about that seemingly intractable problem from a couple of perspectives? Are we just in this moment where it's hard to see where we go?
Well, the first thing I would say, Dan, is that, you know, the vast majority, if you look at all of the data, if you talk to people, polls, everything, say that the vast majority of people in this country believe that Roe should not be overturned, that people, any person who can get pregnant, women in this country, should have the choice around their body. And I think that a small minority of people who are also being manipulated, frankly, and used for political purposes by others, are part of what we're facing, right? It's not just some religious believers. And there are many people, by the way, who are part of the religious community, people of faith, leaders of faith, who absolutely support and recognize the critical importance of the agency of women to make these decisions for themselves and not to have other people put their views and beliefs on everyone else. At the same time, you know, when you look across some of these issues, you see that whether it's restricting abortion access, taking the right to vote away from people, going after trans kids and their health care, you know, being evil toward immigrants who are such an important part of our country and our history, and who are looking for a better life and the opportunity to contribute, like, it's the same people. And this is a place where I will say I feel like, for both innovation and scale, real opportunities. And one thing that many of the people who've been on your great show have talked about, and we've talked about with you all, is the opportunity to move toward scale through collaboration. And I think this is a place where you see some change in how Planned Parenthood is thinking of things. So where we're really expanding from, you know, the idea of the reproductive health services singular lane to reproductive health and access as an engine for health equity and self-determination, right? And of course, that's always been in our mindset. But the only way you're going to really do that toward health equity and self-determination is if we're combining with other groups and organizations to do powerful, scaling, innovative things. And particularly when you look across and see that the people who are attacking, trying to take all these groups out of the Constitution, by the way, are the same folks. And when we unify to take them on and to stand up to this worldview, this authoritarian, patriarchal, and, you know, controlling worldview that threatens the freedoms of so many people, the hard-won freedoms and the freedoms that our country has been moving toward since its inception, that's when we're really going to do something amazing.
In this moment of crisis, Planned Parenthood is uniting with other organizations.
Planned Parenthood and the people that we are collaborating with in terms of the other organizations in the reproductive health rights and justice space, as well as other organizations well beyond that, from climate to immigration to good government, you know, all of the medical and health, I think, are becoming unified. I think a lot of people think this was never going to happen. They just didn't think it was going to happen. And now we have seen, really since the leak, people coming out of the woodwork to say, how can we help? We didn't really believe that this could ever happen here in the United States. Now we do. And now we are ready to be mobilized. So it's going to be obviously political solutions. There have got to be care solutions. And some of this is going to take some real time. And we've got to all show a dedication. We cannot get distracted over the coming years, because it's going to be a good long fight to get everybody back in and to reimagine this in a way that means that not just people have a right, but they actually have access to the care they deserve and need.
So we know that the scale of the problem is likely to increase dramatically, certainly within the US in the short term, and you're working an enormous amount on innovation, creating new services. Can you tell us a bit about the lessons you've learned so far on innovating and then taking those ideas to scale, and how you'll be interested in how you'll be using those going forward?
Yeah. A few learnings from our work with Spring Impact and with Anne May. And we've also worked with the great firm IDEO, the human-centered design firm, who I know have been in a lot of projects with all of us. You know, in rapid response mode, which, as you've pointed out, we're really deeply in and about to be in at a level maybe never before seen, you do have to carve out some space and some people who can think, again, with the big I innovation, and have some tools and resources and can go out and explore. And you don't have, you know, what we all talk about, that kind of fear of failing because so much is on the line. So you got to give some people some permission to that, even if you are continuing every day to do small I innovation and improvement. A learning from our work with you all was the need for a variety of ways to let people touch innovation, because you're really trying to, again, put it into the DNA. So we have kind of some light touch stuff where we have speakers and webinars and workshops and little infusions. And then we have deeper team engagements. And then we have that innovation portfolio who's looking like, okay, if you got to get 150,000 people to care, that might not be the way we've been doing it up to now. We got to keep working on getting people care, but we need some, you know, completely new kinds of partnerships and thinking to sustain that over time and to scale that. I think another one is you just have to keep innovation and what you scale tethered to the organizational goals. I have seen it where, you know, things are very exciting and interesting, and you can create your own goals if you're not careful. And I mean, the good news, I guess, of this bad time is that it's very clear what the organizational goals are and where to be focused. And so I don't think that's a risk in this moment. You know, we talked about that being hard to let go of less promising things, and the disruption moment that can happen, and how do you change manage? I think we often don't think really enough about the organizational infrastructure that has to accompany when you want to take something new, when you want to set aside something old, bring in something new, and then take it out into the world in a big way or scale it up in a big way. And so, you know, it's not just the innovation team saying, hey, we got this great new thing, we're pretty sure it works. It's like there's a whole organization that needs to be prepared for that, that needs to be supported through that. And then there's an element of trust and optimism that you have to keep building about this kind of work and get people through those hard times that, you know, when you're being assaulted in this way, and I really do see, you know, you hear some of these politicians talking, and it's an assault. And it feels like that, and it sounds like that. And so it's hard always in those circumstances to have trust and optimism and to believe that something can work and it can continue to change the world. So I think leaders need to pay attention to that as part of their change and scale agenda.
Next, you'll hear what Dawn had to say right after we found out that Roe versus Wade was officially overturned.
How am I feeling? I'm feeling furious. You know, specifically, of course, for the individually impacted women and people whose lives and choices are further constrained and who are struggling right now to get care. But more broadly, you know, this ruling fundamentally says women cannot be trusted to know what is best for themselves, and that our lives and our bodies are not our own, that they belong at some level to the state, that people who can get pregnant are now the one group to be explicitly denied bodily autonomy and integrity by the law. And it's infuriating. There's a line in the judgment that says abortion is basically not deeply rooted in our history and traditions. It's actually deeply rooted in women's history and traditions, but that's not the history that matters to the oppressor, right? Someone else's history. And I believe that if they wanted to see it, abortion is actually written all over the Constitution because it's called freedom and equality. And we will never stop until everyone can see that and we can have that. So a rough day, but of course, we knew it was coming. And as you and I have discussed, been preparing, ready to go to help as many people as possible to get to care. But it's just a reality that 24 states can't absorb 50 states worth of need. So our job is to do our very best on that, to change culture, the technology, the law, and to use innovation to try and speed our return to the Constitution as fast as we can.
It is thanks to people like Dawn that Planned Parenthood is able to quickly innovate and address the current crisis to reproductive rights in the United States. I hope you were inspired by Dawn's ability to think on her feet while always staying true to the mission and values of the organization. You can learn more about Planned Parenthood and how to get involved through their website, plannedparenthood.org. That's it from us. We're working hard on the up-and-coming second season of Mission to Scale, so please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss out on any of our episodes. While you're there, I'd appreciate it if you could rate and give us a review. And if you love Mission to Scale, I hope you recommend our show to a friend or colleague. Thanks so much for joining, and I'll catch you all in the next season. Mission to Scale is produced by Spring Impact and Human Group Media. If you want to learn more about our work at Spring Impact, visit springimpact.org and follow us at Spring Impact on Twitter.